The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
If you'd like, if you have any questions or comments or reports about your meditation, we could start that way, informally, if you'd like. Last week we had the instructions on emotions. So maybe some of you had some emotions. Yes, in the back there. You speak loudly and I'll try to repeat what you say. He what?
We decided to talk about it, like buddies, and just forget about it all. To my dismay, my wife, her brain kind of exploded, as she couldn't understand the wiring of male thinking. And as I thought about that, I was fascinated by the idea that we can communicate at all. I mean, we're told what anger is, what remorse is, and what happiness is, and what joy is. But until we kind of like hook those feelings to those words, I might have a half a anger, joy, resentment, going on, and I won't be able to pinpoint exactly what it is I'm feeling. I was told that the nature of that is because I'm a man, that women are more identified, can identify their feelings more clearly. And I thought, what a strange twist on our species, that we should share these feelings and have different words for them, or even different physical actions. And how, what a comedy that was, that we managed to get along at all.
Great, thank you. It was well described. And could people hear? Shall I repeat it? So a friend of his disrespected him. He was angry, expected an apology, got none, was resentful. Still nothing came, so then he thought he would take out revenge. And did something that upset his friend. But when he saw his friend upset, then they had to sit down and really talk about it. He was a little bit dismayed to have upset his friend after getting revenged. And then they talked about it and decided to put it behind them to forget it and go on. But then his wife somehow got upset about, I guess, as I understand it, how different men and women are wired around emotions and how the men don't seem to be so connected to their emotions. And he's kind of asking questions about this different wiring. And there was a cartoon many years ago, a cartoon series called Sylvia, I think. And this woman Sylvia goes to a psychic, and the psychic looks into a crystal ball, and she sees how in the year 2015, men everywhere are suddenly in touch with their feelings, and women everywhere are dismayed. I don't know if it's true that men are less touched with their emotions than women. And I don't know if it's useful to have that kind of categorization. I meet plenty of women who are not in touch with their emotions, and I meet plenty of men who are too much in touch with them. And but there, you know, so maybe there is some generalizations that maybe work. But I think what's more important is, and more respectful for everyone, is to just allow each person to be as they are, and then learn to work with that. And I don't think it's useful to judge someone as being too much of something or too little of something. But we start with where we're at, and we try to be mindful of that and discover what it's like. So there are people who are not so aware of their emotions. It could be because many reasons. It could be because they grew up in a culture where they're not supposed to exhibit or share or talk about their emotions. And sometimes both genders in a culture share that cultural inheritance. Sometimes it's one gender that gets it more than others. And I think sometimes in our culture, there are certain emotions which are kind of were encouraged for men and discouraged for men, and certain emotions which are encouraged for women and discouraged for women. And so it's kind of like, which emotions are we in touch with? Which emotions do we bury? So sometimes it's cultural, sometimes it's family, sometimes it's personal issues, and sometimes it might be a personal wiring, or you know, how close you grew up to the equator. It seems that, you know, like, you know, the characterization is that, you know, Italians are supposed to be much more emotional than Norwegians. I grew up in both countries. So I have some of both, maybe. But the important thing is to see where you're at, and then to begin, be curious and look and investigate what is your relationship to your emotions. And that can happen in a more broad terms, a reflective terms. What have you learned about being emotional in your society, in family, growing up? What's been your experiences? What are the attitudes? What are the policies that you've developed around emotions? Just good to get a sense of that. And so maybe talk to friends or your wife or someone. You know me a long time, and what's your impression about which emotions I do well and which I don't, and which I'm in touch with, what I'm not, how I relate to them? And then to get closer into the emotions and begin being mindful of what happens when a particular emotion arises. Are you able to identify it? Does it come with a lot of authority? Some emotions come with some kind of, they seemingly come with authority, like these are true, or it has to be expressed, or it has to be honored. So like anger can be that, tremendous authority. But authority is not inherent in it. There can be anger, and it doesn't have to have any influence on us as well, at all. We don't have to invest or grant it any authority over us. I've had anger bubble up very strongly, and it didn't stick anywhere. It was like the inside was Teflon. It arose, it was powerful, and it just moved through. And I've had anger where there were all these hooks inside of me that are ready to grab it and hold on to it and get involved. And I think learning how to discharge the energy of anger, of emotions, learning how not to have emotions be in charge of us, gives us a lot of freedom to make wiser choices in our lives. And with your friend, it might be that the intervention was needed. And it's possible that there was a wiser intervention with your friend than to get revenge, something that would have more lasting value. There's still a saying that's very meaningful to me, that it can take years to develop a good friend and 2 seconds to lose the friendship. Because friendships usually take slow to build, but you say one thing and you can lose it very quickly. And perhaps a friendship is worth something, it's worth being careful and seeing if there's another way, another honest way of finding a way of resolving conflicts. And I think one of the great things about mindfulness practice and learning how to be present for things, learn how to be present for experience and not react to it, not judge it, that it helps us a lot with being able to do conflict work, conflict resolution, to enter into conflict and have the skills, the tools to be able to have conversations in a wise way, an effective way. Without mindfulness, without calm, relaxed presence, honest presence, it's very difficult to be in conflict with people. So, you know, and all of us will be in conflict sooner or later. I don't think, you know, there's human societies don't exist without some kind of conflict. And so having the ability to know yourself well and stay balanced and calm is very helpful. So I guess there wasn't exactly a question, but is that okay with an answer? Is that adequate?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, then let's start for the topic for today. So the topic today is thinking. And for many people, when they sit down to meditate or try to be mindful, they identify that their thinking is often what makes it difficult to be mindful, to be present, that they start thinking about something. Some people think in words. Some people think more in images. Both are fine ways of thinking. It's just different people have minds work differently, visual minds and verbal minds. But in either way, they can be captivating, the thoughts and the images we have, and we get involved in those rather than being involved with the present moment or with our breathing or whatever we're paying attention to. And so people, one of the important things in mindfulness meditation is to learn how to be mindful of thinking, to learn how thinking, find a way so thinking doesn't derail you from the present moment, doesn't block the unfolding of the present moment for you. So a few things about thinking. Some little stories about them. There's a story from ancient China, Buddhist kind of story, of a Buddhist monk who was a painter, and he was painting a very realistic tiger. And he was up close on the canvas, and he was painting the tiger. And then he took a few steps back to see what he had painted. So he, you know, rather than going into details, he saw the whole thing. And he looked at the thing, and he got so frightened, he ran away. So thinking can be that way. We can start spinning a story about anything at all, and we don't realize that we're spinning the story. We're painting the picture. And at some point, we don't see it as a picture, but we see it as being real. The tiger is real. And then we run away, or we do something, or put our head in the sand, or whatever strategy you have for being scared. Attack some strategies. And perhaps if you think back over your life, you can maybe can remember a situation where your mind told yourself a story that frightened you, but turned out that it wasn't really true. It was a story that you made up. Some person that you saw walking down the street that certainly, I now have friends, people who I thought were kind of scary the first time I saw them. They weren't, and now I know, what was I thinking? But somehow, maybe because they looked like someone, or I don't know what they were, you know, why, but I spun a little story. That's a scary person. That's one story. The other story is, has to do with also a Chinese Zen story of two Chinese Zen monks who were walking through the countryside, walking someplace. And Chinese Buddhist monks have a rule, since they're celibate partly, that they're not supposed to have any physical contact with women, not supposed to touch them. And so they came to a river that you had to ford, you had to cross the river by foot. And on one side, their side of the river, there was a woman who, the river was a little bit too deep for her to cross, or for whatever reason, wanted to cross, but didn't feel she could. And so one of the monks picked her up and carried her across, and on the other side of the river, put her down. The two monks continued to walk their day, their journey for the day, until they came to a monastery where they're going to spend the night. And then the second monk finally couldn't contain himself anymore. He was kind of all worked up. And how could you? How could you have picked up that woman? You're a monk, after all. And so the first monk turned to the second monk and said, I put her down by the river. Why are you still carrying her? So we have the mind also has a very strong tendency to carry ideas, stories, thoughts, memories in a way that's, you know, in this story, you know, was probably painful. He was upset and angry that his friend was, you know, did this thing. And so our relationship to thoughts is often not neutral, but we have particular relationships to them, and sometimes we latch on, we catch on. So much so that there's a story in ancient India of a story of how you catch a monkey. And now apparently monkeys really like sweets. So apparently what they would do is they would take a coconut and hollow it out and tie it, somehow tie the coconut to a tree, strong rope. And they'd hollow it out, but there would be, the way into the hollow part, there'd be a slit that was narrow and long. So the monkey could get his hand in flat into the coconut. And then they put candy inside, and the farmer or the hunter would go hide behind a tree. The monkey would come along, smell the sweet, I guess, and stick the hand in to the coconut, grab the sweet. And as soon as you're holding the sweet, the hand is not flat anymore, it's bunched up, and then it can't be pulled out. And monkeys are so attached to their sweets that no way are they going to let go. And so the hunter comes along and just picks them up, and they've been caught. So that story kind of points to, again, how some of us, maybe our thoughts are not sweet, but somehow are the hand in the mind, the hand of thinking, the hand, you know, we grab on to it, and we're not going to let go. We're going to hold on for dear life. And sometimes to our detriment, then we get caught, someone comes along. And our life is a lot easier if we learn to hold lightly, and then, you know, let go when it's appropriate to let go, but not to hold on. So sometimes our thoughts tell us stories, that we get caught up in the stories and they create realities and worlds which are not real. Sometimes we project that onto the world and onto others. Sometimes our thoughts and stories can be self-righteousness and judgments, attachments connected to them. Sometimes we get wrapped up and caught in this whole world of stories and thoughts and memories. And it can, people can spin out very quickly in this way. So part of what we do in mindfulness practice is learn how not to do that, in a sense, by being mindful of thinking. And as I said last week, I believe, that there's something very powerful and significant about being mindful of something. When you're clearly, distinctly mindful, you're not caught in it. Even though you might say you're feeling angry, and maybe you can't let go of the anger, but oftentimes we kind of know we're angry, but we're busy being angry to really acknowledge it fully. But to in your own mind, kind of almost like you say in your mind, you know, I am really angry now. As opposed to say it like from the side, you know, I'm kind of angry now. You know, I'm really, you know, step back, take a deep breath, and admit, I'm really angry. And in that, there's a kind of pulling back, or kind of a little bit freedom from the anger. Doesn't mean the anger goes away, but it means you're not completely enmeshed in it. So the same thing, same principle can exist with thinking. If you find yourself caught up and involved in thinking a lot, then the clear acknowledgement, oh, this is thinking. I'm spinning out in thought after thought and whatever. But you internally in your mind, you make such a clear acknowledgement. This is thinking. Wow. If you say the wow at the end, that really acknowledges it. And when you say wow, it's also a little bit hard to be completely into it. And then if you remember that if you turn wow upside down, you get mom. If you remember that, then you probably helps you a little bit more to kind of not be quite as caught up, unless the thoughts were about your mom. And then there's a story. This is in our kind of insight meditation scene. It's kind of one of our little local stories. that it was one of our, I think it was one of our teachers back in this early 70s was practicing in India. And she was kind of freed when the teacher told her this. And you can, I don't know what she was freed from, but you can fill it in probably. You can imagine for yourself. The teacher said, "The thoughts of your mother are not your mother." Isn't that something? Simple thing. But have you ever thought about that? That your thoughts you have about somebody is not really the person? But often we operate as if the thoughts and person are the same, and we see it through the filter of our thinking. So there's mindfulness is a way of stepping away from being entangled. It's not a rejection. It's not a judgment of thinking or idea that thinking is wrong or bad. It's really a tool to help us overcome the enmeshment, the entanglement, the attachment. It helps us so we don't end up caught in the coconut trap. Make some sense? So what we do in mindfulness practice is to learn how to be mindful of thinking. When thinking, when it's useful to be mindful of thinking. When we have just kind of surface chatter that's kind of idle and not so strong, then in meditation practice, the usual thing to do is just let go of the thoughts and go back to your breathing. You find yourself thinking, let go, come back. Let go, come back. And you can let go many times. And what's important is not how many times you wandered off. What's important is how many times you came back. There's something very significant about the act of coming back, waking up from thinking. Don't underestimate its value. But sometimes it's important to go and actually spend more time looking, being mindful, clearly mindful of thinking, without the idea that you're trying to stop it. Because if you have the idea that you're trying to stop thinking, chances are that you're a little bit caught by it. You're a little bit have a judgment about it. You're a little bit aversive towards it. And mindfulness practice is not about having a judgment or being aversive, but rather finding the freedom that comes from clearly, fully seeing or knowing what's happening now. So to help with this process of clearly, so sometimes we turn towards thinking and we try to be mindful of it. Some people find this hard initially, but it's one of the great tools of a wise life, is to be able to know how to be mindful of thinking. And the more mindful you are of thinking, the more your life opens up to new possibilities of thinking, of relating to thoughts and the ideas and concepts. It's quite a phenomenal thing. So one of the things we do when we're mindful of thinking, and this is a very important point, is that for the purposes of mindfulness or for the purposes of meditation, we're not that interested in the content of your thought, the content of what you're telling yourself. So it isn't like we turn towards then try to understand, what am I thinking and why am I thinking that and what happened that I'm thinking this and you know. But rather than the content, the idea in mindfulness is to become aware of the process of thinking. So imagine that you hear two people having a very animated conversation. It looks pretty interesting how animated it is. And so you tune in to listen. And because they're speaking English, you get really interested in the stories they're telling each other, the content. Now imagine that you two people are having an animated conversation and they are speaking a foreign language you don't know. And there's no hope for you kind of to decipher what they're saying. But now you can't tune in to the content of their words, but now you can tune in to the emotional tone, the energy, the process by which they're speaking. You notice that they're using their hands. You notice that they're raising their voice. You notice that they're, talking rapid fire. You notice all kinds of things about the process that you didn't notice because you may be blinded by the content. That makes some sense? So in the same way, when we bring mindfulness to ourselves, it can be very helpful to know what we're thinking. I don't want to say that that's not important, But mindfulness meditation and this freeing process works best when we primarily tune in to the process. And so it doesn't matter so much what actually the words are that you're thinking. So there's a little story I like to tell in this intro class. It's kind of like, so we look at thinking as if it's just without, maybe even with amazement that you're thinking. Just, well, look at that thought. So imagine that NASA sends up a probe deep in the cosmos with a very sensitive instruments. And out there in space, for the first time ever, they're able to pick up a thought. No one's ever seen a thought before. They've all kind of been in people's skulls. And they actually finally had this instrument that sees this float's been floating around for a long time. And it's like seeing the Earth for the first time from the moon. Wow, finally we see a thought, the shape, the color, the texture. It's like amazing. No one ever had a clue what it looked like. It probably wouldn't matter so much what the thought was in terms of the content. It was like, wow, a thought. Isn't this amazing? This is what it looks like. So I say all this with the idea that we're interested in the process, the event, not the story. Okay? So what I'm going to do now, what we're going to do now is I'm going to lead you through a kind of a guided exercise, guided mindfulness exercise, that hopefully will give you a little bit of sense of how to bring mindfulness attention to the process of thinking, and in doing so, perhaps help you pull back a little bit from being wrapped up with the content or being reactive to the content or being caught. Okay? So if you want to take a comfortable, alert meditation posture. So first we'll kind of do the general meditation to settle in, and then we'll do the exercise. So with your eyes gently closed, sit up a little bit straighter than you normally would. But not so much that you strain, but enough so that maybe a little bit of sense of energy or alertness in your spine, your back, your torso, lifting. And then take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Breathing in deeply into your torso. Breathing in deeply and letting your rib cage expand and stretch as if you're getting a massage from the inside. Breathing in deeply, and then as you exhale, relax, soften, let go. And then let your breathing return to normal. And spend a few moments scanning through your body to see if there's some easy places in your body that you can soften or relax. Sometimes it's helpful to do the relaxing on the exhale. Perhaps softening, relaxing the face. Having some softening in the shoulders and the shoulder blades. Some people find they can soften or relax an area of their chest, center of their chest. Particularly useful to soften the belly. Let it hang forward, fall against your belt or your pants. And then within your body, part of your physical experience, become aware of how your body experiences breathing. And begin this by just getting curious of what it's like now for the body to be breathing. Whatever way your breathing's okay, just be interested. Get in touch with it. What parts of the body move? Slow or how fast is your breathing? How deep or how shallow is breathing? For now, see if you can let go of what you're thinking about in favor of letting go into your breathing. Especially as you exhale, remember to let go of thoughts, concerns, so you can better feel the exhale in your body. You might have all kinds of thoughts and reactions and judgments and commentary about what's happening. See if you can let those fall to the wayside. You don't have to get involved or believe them or pick them up. And instead, be very simple, breathing in and breathing out. See if you can hang out with the experience of breathing. And then now to switch what we're doing. You can stop noticing your breathing or trying to be with your breathing. And you can stop letting go of your thoughts. Now you're allowed to think whatever your mind is thinking. And instead of letting go of it, look directly at it. Be clearly aware, like you're watching or the mind think or visualize. You have permission to think. Just know very clearly that's what you're doing as you're doing it. Doesn't matter what you think. If your thinking stops, you can always go back to your breathing and wait for the next thought. And experiment a little bit with how you can be aware of thinking when you're thinking. So that the awareness is like a clear acknowledgement that you're thinking. The distinct knowing. And then as you become aware of, mindful of thinking, rather than being aware of what you're thinking about, see if you can notice how much energy, forcefulness is involved in your thinking. Is your thinking very calm and just barely floating, appearing and disappearing? Or is it adamant, strong thoughts? One after the other, rapid fire. As you allow yourself to think and are being mindful of it, is it pleasant or unpleasant for you, the experience of thinking? Either one is fine. No need to judge what's happening. But just notice if this particular time, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant to be involved in thinking. Or neutral, neither. The idea is to do these exercises as a way of stepping back a little bit and being a little bit objective, just seeing it for what it is without being caught by it or judgmental or reactive. You have permission to think whatever you're thinking. And then if you're thinking more in words, if you listen to the tone of the inner voice, almost as if you're speaking a foreign language. What do you hear in that tone? What kind of tone is it? Or if you think more in the images, what's the mood of the images? Is it kind or harsh? Forgiving or judgmental? Critical or accepting? Eager or hesitant? Anxious or confident, content? What's the tone of your inner voice or your inner images? And as you allow yourself to think whatever you're thinking, is there any underlying or background emotion that is fueling your thinking? And if there is any emotion that's fueling what you're thinking, be okay with that. But spend a few moments just being mindful of that emotion. And then see if it's possible for you to locate the place in your body where you're thinking. Maybe if you're thinking in words, where the loudspeaker is. Or if you think in images, where the screen is, where the images appear. And rather than being so involved in the content of a thought, see what happens if you're mindful of the location of thinking. It's not all of who you are, your thoughts. Just a small part is involved. And that small part of who you are can dominate. But if you see it as only part of your full self, by noticing its location, what happens? Sometimes it's possible to be aware of the physicality of thinking, the pressure or the tension or the energetics, that some part of your body is activated with energy or pressure or tension as you think. You know, some people, their eyebrows bunch up or their jaws tense up, shoulders. Or there's pressure inside the skull, the head. You might not notice anything now, but take a little few moments and see if there's any physicality or any place of your body that seems active in relationship to thinking. And if there is any place that seems tense or pressure or active, see if you can relax it. See if you can let go and soften that part of your body. And then the final little exercise is based on the idea that there's your thoughts, whatever they might be. In a sense, there's you aware of your thoughts. And between the two, between you and your thinking, there's your interest. How much you invest yourself in the thought. And in this last exercise, see if you can notice something about the quality or the intensity or subtlety of your interest in your thoughts. Are you completely disinterested and they just occur? Or are you fascinated? Are you involved? Are you glued to them? And then to end this sitting, come back again into your breathing. If it's helpful, you take a few deep breaths again. And let yourself take in the experience of breathing as fully as you can. At this point, you can let go of your thoughts if you can. No need to think anymore. Just rest with your breathing for a few moments here. And then again, take a couple of deep breaths, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. One of the most useful instructions I received about concerning thoughts in meditation was the instructions, don't be bothered by your thinking. And the reason why that was so helpful was that I was bothered by them. And there's a and when you're bothered by your thinking, then you're kind of caught in it. So imagine, maybe this is like you're thinking about what to have for dinner, and you're meditating. So then it occurs, you have, then you have the next thought is, I shouldn't be thinking about dinner. I need to stop thinking about dinner. I have to figure out a way to think of something. I'm not supposed to be thinking when I'm meditating, so therefore I shouldn't be thinking about dinner. I have to figure out some way to stop thinking about dinner, but I can't stop thinking about dinner. And I'm thinking, right, about how to end thinking. It doesn't work so well, right? And in fact, the more I react, the more it gives energy into thinking. When you're not bothered, then that extra involvement, entanglement doesn't occur. So I found, it's okay, don't be bothered by it. It's okay. I mean, the mind, that's what mind does. The mind thinks, it's a thinking machine. You know, just that's what it's been made to do, is to make thoughts. And it's not wrong that you're thinking. And your thinking mind will get calmer and calm down a lot faster if you're not alarmed, if you're not bothered by it, if you're relaxed about it. Give it time and it'll settle down. Probably all of you have some little sense of the difference between a calm mind and an agitated mind. Your mind has a capacity to go calm, but it'll get agitated if you're agitated about your thinking. Make some sense? So I'm curious to hear from some of you what that exercise in looking at thoughts was like. What was it like to finally, if you can use the mic.
It was kind of difficult to me because whenever I found a thought, it stopped. Mm. It disappeared.
So it's difficult for you because whenever you found a thought, it disappeared. So that is a very important lesson. So did it disappear faster this way than how it usually you're trying to let go of your thoughts and go to your breath?
Back to breath.
Yeah. But when you before we did this exercise, uh-huh. and you're just meditating on the breath, was it that easy? Was it easy for you to let go of your thoughts then?
Yeah.
Good. Also, so you're lucky. So this is an interesting thing that I like to distinguish between thinking and thoughting. And thoughting is what the mind does. Like thinking, you know, it just makes thoughts. It pumps them out. Thinking is when we get involved with a thought. And then we create associations and reactions and responses. And when we have a lot of strong reactions to the thought, then it's very hard to stop the process of thinking. But if we're pretty relaxed, and we're not really, you know, the thought occurs, but we're not really that caught in it, then we don't feed it. And the only reason why thinking continues through time is because in some way or other we're feeding it, we're involved. So for you, probably, when you turned and actually saw the thought arise, you were able to see it for what it was, and you weren't feeding it, you weren't reacting to it. And so it just vanishes. And that's nice. But someday it'll happen that it won't be so easy. Someday you'll have a really good bout of thinking. And then you can do some of this exercise on your own. So someone else. Anybody else find that looking at thoughts, the thoughts actually were disappeared? A number of you have had that experience. Is there a second mic somewhere?
Well, this may be thinking about thinking.
A little bit closer.
Whatever you were saying about thinking or what thinking, I find, for example, I'll have no thoughts, and then I get this self-congratulatory thought, no thinking. And then I'm editorializing on that. So there's maybe a little thought that comes up, and it's very gentle, but then there's this sort of commentary, and then I guess that's engaging. There's this running commentary narrative about, yeah. Oh, this is the story about what she's thinking, and I'm aware that I'm looking at it.
Yeah. So it's just gentle. Gentle, good, very glad to hear. But what happens is that sometimes some thoughts get our attention, get us caught more than others, and some get us caught in such a way that they camouflage themselves. So we don't really recognize that it's even thinking, because we're thinking about something. So that's not a thing, so that doesn't count. And so we get, somehow that camouflages itself and we get caught and lost in it. So, I mean, I've sat in meditation and had a very, very quiet mind and said to myself, I'm not thinking. And I believe it. But in saying I'm not thinking, I'm not, you know, that's not what's going on anymore. Okay, thank you.
I have a corollary to that, which is thinking about meditating is not meditating.
That's right.
And when you listen to Dharma talks and you have lots of ideas in your head, it's very easy to spend your time on the cushion thinking about meditating.
Yeah, I've sat in the cushion and spent a lot of time thinking about not only meditating, but thinking about how it's really important for me to tell everybody else to meditate. You know, it's really good, you should try it. But when I'm doing that, I'm not meditating. So what do you do when that happens to you?
I acknowledge that I'm doing it and then go back to the breath.
And you can let go. Okay, thank you. So any surprises, anything you're surprisingly discovered about your thinking and doing this exercise? Is there another mic? Where's the other mic? Okay.
Surprise, you asked us at one point to reflect on whether we liked thinking or not, or did we find it enjoyable, and I found my immediate response was, no, thinking is really unpleasant for me. And I didn't even have to think about it that hard. It just
That was surprising to you.
Unpleasant, yeah, because I'm I do research for a living, you know, I like to use my brain. I mean, I know, you know, I'm pretty anxiety prone, which is a reason that I became interested in mindfulness, yeah. But just that it would be so clear that, yeah, it's just this endless list of tasks that need to be fulfilled or things that need to be followed. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, it's unpleasant, painful.
Uh-huh. So some people, it's quite common for people's minds to fall into grooves and the habits of how to think. There's many different ways of thinking. But if we regularly and continually think the same way, we fall into the groove and it becomes a habit to think a certain way. So people who are anxious spend a lot of time having anxious thoughts, and then it becomes a habit to have anxious thoughts. And anxious thoughts are tiring. And so that's the primary thing we're doing. It's possible to think in a way that's very relaxing and soft and, you know, almost rejuvenating. But most people are so locked or caught up in their thinking that their thinking is actually tiring and wearying. So it's interesting to discover that. And so now what? What's next?
If only it was so easy.
Sorry?
I said, if only it was so easy.
I know it's easy, but I think there should be something next for you, and that is at least to reflect a little bit and think about this and this information you have, and take it into account and see where it goes. Yes.
That if I got this close, that what he just said made me think something, which is I was noticing that I often go into a default mode of thinking that isn't pleasant. It's like he said, list making, or, you know, thinking I haven't decided what to do, you know, about what I'm going to go see my dad next, or I kind of go through all these things. And but that it is helpful to say to oneself, oh, this is just the default mode I go into. I don't have to think about that now. And then just try to consciously shift. But I was having a terribly hard time during this sitting, not getting away from those kinds of lists of...
Yeah. In this sitting, you didn't have to get away. You're allowed to do it. And you just look at it.
Yeah. That was helpful, just to sit there and say, okay, look, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it was helpful, how was it helpful, just to let it happen?
Well, I think it takes away some of the anxiety. Once I thought, well, I'm just trying to decide X, you can think about the emotion that actually... It's because usually the underlying emotion that it brings up that makes you unable to leave the thought. So that was helpful.
So you felt a little bit freer from the thoughts by doing this?
Yeah.
The thoughts are caught by it and churned away by it. Good. So.
I think I had kind of the opposite reaction. It became more irritating and frustrating, and it went from being, okay, I have a thought and let it go kind of thing, to and go back to my breathing, to, okay, I want to get out of here and I want to scream and I want to leave this place. And then the imagery became, you know, that little man on, who does the movie Critics, came up and he started banging a big bong, a gong, and saying, you know, it's time to go, it's time to go. So, and all I could think of was, well, okay, what should I do? Should I just stop and decide, you know, I've had enough?
They could do that. That's okay. But it's interesting. So when you brought your, the instruction was to bring your attention to thinking itself rather than letting go of it. And there's something about bringing attention to your thinking was perhaps...
It made it more frustrating and thoughts came faster.
Oh, so thoughts came faster.
Thoughts came faster. It was more irritating.
What was irritating?
The thinking.
The thinking. Your thinking was irritating. And what was it about your thinking? Just when you first started getting irritating, what was it about the thinking that was irritating?
I don't know.
Was it something unpleasant about it? Was it something you didn't like about it? Something you'd prefer not to do? Or
I think it's because the amount of... I think the thinking was about all the things that I have to get done. I have some deadlines to make. And the more of all of those tasks that are associated with it came with it.
Ah, so you have this backlog of things you have to do that you can... That's what you're thinking. If your mind's given the freedom to think, it's going to go into those...
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to see. So I'm not saying this is your situation, but you can now maybe see how some people might choose to run away from their own mind by distracting themselves in television or all kinds of things, because to really be present for themselves and really see and be present feels so uncomfortable.
No, I mean, I think for myself it is sort of it. Like, I'd rather go do something fun than take care of what I know needs to be done in order for the longer-term effect.
Great. So there's a little bit, here's a third option. So rather than having fun, and rather than planning even better so you can take care of these things, meditation can involve going one or two ways. It can go a little bit more the fun way, maybe, by just forgetting about all that and just staying with your breath and calming down. Relaxing, which is a beautiful thing to do. The other thing, which is you can turn towards a thinking mind and begin understanding how your mind works. Not in terms of better planning or figuring out what you have to do, but how you get caught by plans. What's the nature of your anxiety? All these questions I asked are questions to kind of begin pulling apart the big knot. People can be so knotted up, or there's so many pieces that are all glued together, and by carefully investigating, we see the different elements of thinking that adds up to this whole phenomena of thinking, and then begin to untangle it, unravel it, so that the things you have to do in your life don't have to oppress your mind, and then you can go back and take care of what needs to be taken care of, but without that extra anxiety or for clamping down that can occur. So I don't know, you know, I don't know you well enough if this is appropriate advice, but in a situation like that, this is actually one of the best times to do what I was suggesting. Is to actually don't run away, but turn towards it and get to know it better. Because it's something very important about you in that experience. So maybe one more in the back. I see a hand. Right there. And it's right back in the outer hall.
Gil, when we do meditation and let's say at the time I do meditation, I don't think, but I know I exist. That when I know I exist, that's thinking too, right?
Yes.
And is it possible to go beyond that so that even you don't know you exist?
We're not necessarily trying to stop all cognition. We're just trying to find a place to be peaceful, not caught, be free. But it is very interesting that if the meditation goes in the direction of becoming calmer and calmer, the thinking becomes slower and thinner or less powerful. And as the thinking becomes calmer and more relaxed, there starts to be more a space between our thoughts. In a busy life, the thoughts can be just kind of come out rapid fire, one after the other. In fact, they overlap each other and just like, you know. But sometimes people even say they feel like they're thinking more than one thing at the same time. But as the mind gets quieter, it becomes just thinking one thing at a time, and there's like a lot of space between it. And then the interesting question is, when there's no gap between your thoughts, who are you when there's no thought to tell you? You kind of exist. I mean, reflectively afterwards, you realize you exist. You didn't die. You're still around. You're aware. There can be awareness without thinking. And there's no thoughts which should tell you who you are. There's no story. Because generally, the sense of self, the ideas of who we are, is a story that we tell ourselves through the avenue of our thinking. And some people find it very threatening to stop thinking or to have these gaps because they're not telling themselves the story they need to tell themselves. And so if meditation is going to continue over time and you go deep into it, then sooner or later some people have to learn to overcome or work through the fear that exists about letting go of what they're thinking about. Because so much of their orientation, their identity, and so many things is based on the thoughts, the stories we tell ourselves. Some people are so entangled or so caught up in thinking that it's thinking that they think they are their thoughts. That's who they think they are, is that which is doing the thinking. And so it's inconceivable that you would stop thinking because then you wouldn't exist. But in fact, you can exist quite happily, actually many times more happy, without the help of all those thoughts that are going on. Now I want to give the instructions for what we do in our tradition here for mindfulness of thinking. So the first thing is, we're not at war with our thoughts. If anything, the idea is to have a friendly relationship with your thoughts. It's okay to think. I mean, humans think. Don't set up your thinking as being something you have to kind of reject or push away or be, you know. At the same time, it's important to be realistic and realize that thinking is something that we tend to get caught in to our detriment. And so we're not necessarily trying to get rid of thinking, but we're trying to free ourselves from the caughtness in it. So it's possible to think and be free. So I say that so you don't set up as some lofty ideal that what you're supposed to do is end up having a mind completely blank and no thoughts at all. Occasionally that can happen in meditation, and it can be quite nice if it happens. But if you set up that as a goal, then it's probably not very useful and helpful for the whole process as it unfolds. So be relaxed about the fact you're thinking. So in this meditation practice, I encourage you to use the breath as your home base, as the primary focus, to get centered, to relax, to connect yourself to the present moment. So keep coming back to your breath. Be with your breath. Work the breath. However, when thinking, if you notice yourself getting caught up in thought, which you will, and it's more light surface chatter, it's easy to let go of, by all means let go and come back to your breathing. Sometimes what happens then is that the thinking slowly, over the course of the meditation period, thinking will slowly calm down and you'll think less and less caught up in thoughts and it'll be easier to stay with your breath. So just let go. Don't be bothered by it. Just let go. And if 1,000 times you have to let go, it's well-spent time to do it. Sometimes the thoughts don't disappear so easily, or you can't let go of them that easily. At that point, that's when we then stop trying to let go of them, because if they don't want to go easily, and we keep trying to let go of it, then you start getting caught in their orbit again. Then you're bothered, right? So that's not useful. So then, if the thinking is persistent, then the instructions is be mindful of thinking. As if that, just as you are mindful of your breathing, now be mindful of the fact that you're thinking, the event of thinking, the process of thinking. So it means, in a sense, looking the thinking right in the eye. I see you. I know you're thinking. I know thinking what's going on now. Wow. Mom. So just full acknowledgement of it. And if the thinking, if the involvement with thought is not that strong, then the full acknowledgement of it sometimes is enough to let it dissipate and not to be caught by it. Sometimes it just needs to be acknowledged, and then it knows it's been seen, and just like with a friend, right? It needs to be acknowledged, and then it'll be quiet, a little kid or something. And so you acknowledge it fully. Also, if you acknowledge it fully sometimes, really acknowledge it, like, oh, this is, you know, planning, I'm planning, then it's easier for the mind to say, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. But if you kind of half-acidly kind of, you know, note, you know, I'm kind of thinking, but you're really in it, you know, and, you know, then you don't have the time to reflect or think back, you know, this is not what I want to be doing. So the full acknowledgement sometimes make it easier. Then you can let go of it and come back to your breathing. Sometimes it's not that easy. Sometimes the thinking, you're really caught and you can't let go. You can't imagine how you're going to let go. You're just involved and churning away. Or you can let go, for sure, but it lasts for about a quarter of a second before you pick it up again. And it's just like you can't get off it. You can't get off it. So that's a time when then you just take a deep breath, relax, and let your, and then do, go in, just be mindful of thinking without any idea that it's going to go away. But remember, we're not interested in the content. We're interested in the process. So you can just kind of feel it. What's going on? What's the experience of thinking like? So is it pleasant or unpleasant? Is there a lot of energy or is there not a lot of energy? Is there a mood or an emotion or a tone connected to it? Where is it happening? If sometimes you can find a location. Is there any emotions connected to it? What does it feel like physically? If your thinking is very strong and very persistent, chances are some part of your physical body has been activated along with it. You know, on the forehead or on the eyes. Sometimes the jaws, the mouth, the teeth, you know, the shoulders, many places get activated. And sometimes you can see it, the way we get energized. It's very, maybe I said this last week or recently. If you find yourself really, really calm and relaxed sometimes in meditation or in life, and you feel yourself centered and grounded in your torso and your body, and something occurs that reminds you of some unresolved fury that you have about a date that didn't go right in high school. How could he have, you know? And, you know, and from, you know, you go from 0 to 60 in a second. You know, just that's somehow you thought of, you remembered this date. And as you do, as you remember this date and your thoughts and the emotions come, you can feel your body, your energetics, and its center of gravity in your body change. Chances are, if you were more grounded and centered in the torso, you find your energy going up into your head, and you know. And so it's interesting. You can physically, there's when strong emotions, there's a physical component to it. The value of feeling the physical aspect of it, the value of feeling the energetics, the value of feeling whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, the value of feeling the location is to help us disconnect with the story, disconnect with the judgments and the reactions we have about the fact that we're thinking. It's meant to try to help us be relaxed and soft and step away and be free of it, just to watch. Just watch. Have you ever been in the movies and the movie is fascinating and captivating or terrifying or, you know, just amazing movie, you know, you're completely there. And then the person near you coughs and you're kind of like, well, I'm in a movie. And you look around, they're eating popcorn and you kind of suddenly there's light streaming down through the air and you realize it's just nothing's happening. It's just, you know, and, it, you know, it's just this light show on this flat screen. she's not really getting kissed there on the screen. It just you know. And you kind of wake up from being immersed in the movie. I hope you've had that experience once in a while. I hope you don't. And now, in movies, you're supposed to get immersed. That's what you're paying money for. you're not paying anyone for this, you know. You get involved in your inner drama. And it's very good sometimes to step back from it and realize, you know, it's kind of the equivalent. I'm in a movie. You know, it's not really real. It's my thoughts of my mother are not my mother. I'm just spinning the story. And to see it that way gives you a lot of strength and power and options about how to go forward. Then you're not caught in it. You're not pushed around by it. You're not enslaved by it. It's not running the show. You begin learning how to run the show. You learn how to make choices about what to do. So this investigation, this turning. So if the thinking is mild, we just let go of it and come back to the breath. If it's a little bit stronger, we clearly acknowledge. We stop in our tracks and say, I'm thinking. Thinking is happening. Sometimes it can be helpful if acknowledgement is particular. So if it's easy to recognize that you're planning, note planning. If it's remembering, note, say to yourself, I'm remembering. If it's fantasy, say fantasy. But don't spend any time trying to figure out the right word. You know, if it's obvious. Thinking, just saying thinking is fine. But sometimes it's helpful to actually say a word in your mind of what it is you're thinking, because the acknowledgement is fuller. If it still persists, then get curious, be interested. What is this phenomenon of thinking like? What's my relationship to it? What does it feel like? If it's really strong, ask yourself or explore, what is the emotion out of which it comes? Or that's embedded or part of the field that it comes in. Because some kinds of thinking are being fueled or are created the factory of our emotions. So for example, you can have planning thoughts, and a good majority of people who spend a lot of time in meditation planning, what underlies the planning is anxiety, fear of some kind. You can let go of your planning thoughts a lot, over and over. You just let go. But if the anxiety is not acknowledged and dealt with, the anxiety is still actively going to pump out more of these planning thoughts. So so sometimes if there's a lot of persistent thinking, you want to step back and do mindfulness of emotion. Notice, is there emotion that's part of it? You might be planning some wonderful thing, and it's not fear. It might be delightful anticipation. And if you don't want to be caught by the delightful anticipation, even though it's pleasant, then you want to do mindfulness of anticipation and feel what that's like, the mindfulness of emotion. Make some sense? And then the last thing you can do is, if there's some energetic physical part, tension or pressure someplace connected to your thinking, then as you breathe out, see if you can relax that. So I find myself, for example, that I'll feel this pressure or tension in what I call my thinking muscle, which for me is located inside my skull, behind my forehead. And if I'm really involved in some kind of thinking, I feel this pressure and energy there. There are all those buzzing bees, you know. And I'll take a deep breath and soften and relax. I have this image of flattening out like a lake, that part of my mind. And that helps the thinking get quieter. Because just like when emotions can be the factory, when there's a lot of physical activity or pressure or tension connected to thinking, that also functions as a factory that keeps pumping it out. And sometimes it's a loop, a cycle, where you have an emotion. I mean, let's say, for example, that you're planning. The planning arises because there's fear. So you have fear, then there's plans, and because you're planning, you notice you're planning, and then you get more worried about what's going on, And so that creates more worry. And then that worry then creates even more interesting thoughts about the future. And that creates more worry, and it goes around in a cycle. Mindfulness practice stops the cycle by stepping back and no longer feeding it. By not being bothered, not being reactive, not being judgmental, being very kind of, in a certain kind of way, very accepting, very open to it, just to notice it. Step back and just, oh, this is what's happening now. This is what's happening. So we have a couple of minutes before the end. You have any questions about this? Is this too complicated or what? The question about being woken up about thoughts. What does that mean? From real sleep or from...
Yeah, from real sleep. Just intense thoughts of what I should... Waking up
with intense thoughts of what I should do, or in the case of I finished a project 4 days ago, I'm still waking up with thoughts that would be connected with the project if it weren't complete,
right.
And it is complete.
Right. So the human mind continues to function when we're sleeping. We're processing our day, our emotions, our feeling, there's kind of thinking. There's a lot going on behind the scene in there, even when we're awake. some things can bubble up quite strongly in our sleep. Sometimes people have it in their dreams, and the dreams wake them up. Sometimes it can be thoughts. If there's a lot of emotion and a lot of unresolved feelings or a lot of strong habit and attachment, all those things are still operating. Those grooves, those habits are still operating while we're sleeping. So it's very helpful to find a way not to go to sleep churning away or actively involved in the old habit momentum that we've carried through our day. So, you know, falling asleep, you know, if you spend a lot of time worried about the next day, and that's how you fall asleep, then those worrying thoughts are going to be carried into your sleep and probably affect the quality of your sleep. And so it's nice to find some way to go to sleep that's, you know, do something different besides worry. For you in a project that's been going on for some time, there's momentum, there's attachment, there's unresolved feelings, many things that could be involved. So if you wanted to use mindfulness practice in a situation like that, then what you would do is you would sit up in bed or go to your meditation cushion and then sit there and do a mindfulness of what's happening in the present moment now that you've woken up. So if there's all these thoughts are going on, probably what's useful to do then is to drop into your body and be mindful of the emotions that are part of that thinking. And then those emotions have a chance to move out, to resolve themselves, to relax. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, thank you very much.
So there is a handout for today that covers this a little bit. It's important to remember if you're doing this mindfulness meditation that it's meant to be simple. So this exercise I gave you, all these different things to explore, can seem like a lot of things to keep track of and be aware of. Keep it really simple. Just rely on simple curiosity, simple investigation. Notice what's happening now. Turn towards it. Take it in. Let it register. What's happening now in a fuller way? If you're in doubt what to do in meditation, the best policy, I think, is just go back to your breath. Or if you can't do that and you're in doubt of what to do, then note doubt. There's doubt happening. I'm a doubtful thought. I don't know what to do. This is what a confused mind is like. And then get interested to be mindful of what it's like to have a confused mind. Isn't this interesting? As opposed to getting caught by the confusion and wondering and leaving that on the... The image I have is... So we're on a stage, and all these actors are doing their parts, but there's a stage director off stage who's directing the show. The idea in mindfulness practice is to have no one in the audience. no one off stage. He has to put everything on the stage so we see everything. So if you're there in the audience seats as the stage director, saying, I'm confused, I don't know what to do, what should I happen now? Bring it on the stage and say, oh, now I'm confused. Everything goes on the stage when we do mindfulness. Okay? So thank you. So next week we'll do, there's a fifth week, and we're going to do a couple of different things. But we're going to do what's sometimes called mindfulness of the mind, distinct from thinking. And this thing mind, this word mind, the Buddhist word for mind, sometimes it's called heart. And it's pointing to be mindful of something which is quite deep inside of us. Some people might call it the soul, though Buddhists don't have souls. But we're okay people. But we have this other thing, so that's good enough. And so enjoy your week, pick up the handout, and see you next week. Thank you.